A Breakfast Huddle replay from Money FM 89.3.
It's the day after Budget 2019 has been announced, and I'm sure you're trying to go through all that detail, trying to digest everything, right? Well, to quickly summarize the budget, first, $6.1 billion will be set aside for the Merdeka Generation Package, which will include healthcare subsidies, money for healthy activities, and public transport.
Now, you know, Elliot, that's going to be a $200 million boost for the Bicentennial Community Fund and a $1.1 billion Bicentennial bonus for all Singaporeans. Now, for travellers, not so good news. They'll be getting lower allowances for GST-free purchases and duty-free alcohol. So if you spend less than 48 hours overseas, the value of goods that enjoy GST relief goes down from $150 currently to $100. If you're away for more than 48 hours overseas, enjoy GST relief on goods or worth $500, down from $600 previously. An alcohol duty-free concession will also be tightened from 3 litres to 2 litres. So you're a frequent traveller, well, that's one less bottle of wine or whiskey that you can take away.
The government will continue to invest in Singaporeans across all stages of their lives, supporting them in their careers by launching new professional conversion programmes relating to blockchain, embedded software and prefabrication. The career support programme will be extended for 2 more years. And finally,
now, the government's also investing 30% of our total expenditure this year to support defence, security and diplomacy efforts. So that's a significant chunk of the budget.
So let's take a look at the political and social observations of this year's budget. We welcome into the studio a good friend of ours, Eugene Tan, Associate Professor of Law at SMU. Good morning, Prof. Eugene.
Morning, Elliot. Morning, Brian.
Welcome back. I suppose, for starters, this is really so much information, but what were some of the key takeaways for you?
I think, you know, Ella, when we look at the budget, I think it certainly represents an attempt to prepare for the future.
Okay.
But as well as looking after current needs. And I think when you look at this year's budget, for example, with the Merdeka Generation Package, it also sort of looks back, you know, trying to provide recognition and gratitude, you know, for Singaporeans who came of age when Singapore became independent. So I think in terms of takeaway, I would say that, again, another prudent budget. There is something in it for everyone. I suppose if we start to bean count, then we might get a bit upset and feel that, well, maybe, you know, we should have gotten more, a person should have gotten more. But I think, you know, here is really a budget where it is hard to, you know, to complain, you know, and say that in terms of the priorities that this country faces, you know, that the budget doesn't provide for those needs, you know, whether it's infrastructure,
sure,
whether in terms of education, you know. So I think overall, it is a safe, conservative budget, and in a way, no surprises given that we are going into an election either this year or next year.
We'll get into that in a while. We'll get into that.
But let's take a little bit of a retrospective look as well as our previous budgets. And could you maybe give us some insights in terms of how the focus has changed today versus, say, 2 or 3 years ago?
Well, you know, Brian, the budget is, for me, as someone who looks at a budget, you know, over the years, it's been amazingly consistent, right? So by that, I mean, you know, one budget seeks to build on what the previous ones have done. I think, you know, in response to your question, I would say that the budget is now a lot stronger on the social dimensions, you know. So it sees the need to enable the economy to generate, you know, the growth, the opportunities for Singaporeans. But I think it also recognizes that you can't talk about a vibrant economy, people willing to take risks, if there aren't enough social safety nets. So I would say that, you know, one aspect is the stronger dimension on social spending.
Is that also, Eugene, a response to the increased conversation about income inequality in Singapore?
Oh, definitely, right. I think the budget needs to respond to some of these major concerns, some of these major trends in our society. And so you can see in the budget, you know, there's this conscious attempt, you know, to redistribute the country's wealth. There'll always be a question of whether more could be done. But I think, you know, when you look at the budgets today and let's say of those 10 years ago, I think in terms of social spending, it's gone up significantly.
Yeah. This is a running thing you'd expect with the next generation of leaders taking over, perhaps?
We haven't, at least for me, I don't think I've got a sense that, you know, what the next generation of leaders, the fourth generation, how they approach the budget. I think that there is that consistency that I talked about. That isn't really, you know, an attempt to transform the budget as such. So it's, in many ways, you know, there is sort of a template that they have decided works pretty well, you know, doesn't ruffle too many feathers. So if you think about this year's budget, for example, in many ways, you know, the thunder was in a way taken away when ministers and all start to talk about the Merdeka Generation Package. In fact, it has been 6 months in the making because PM Lee announced it in August during his National Day rally speech. So it was really about just filling in the details, right? Okay. But you know, it has taken away that, you know, oomph element.
But wouldn't many people argue that in fact, the whole Merdeka Package itself is really sort of constructed with the elections around the corner?
Well, I wouldn't be surprised. I mean, you know, any government, you know, will certainly want to demonstrate what it is capable of, right? You know, and you think about it, this is a $6.1 billion big ticket item, you know, that will be funded out of the coming budget, you know, so there is no need to draw down on past reserves or even current reserves. So I take the view that, you know, it is something significant because I think it sets, you know, the message that, well, if you want your big ticket items, well, the governments have to be able to find the means for it, you know, and we shouldn't be tapping into, you know, the piggy bank, you know, unless it's something really absolutely necessary, you know, in terms of, let's say, a national emergency.
We're speaking with Associate Professor of Law at SMU, Eugene Tan, in the studio. We're talking about the political and social observations of Budget 2019. Prof. Eugene, I'd like to get your opinion on this, and not to throw you off guard here. It was announced that if you're 50 to 64 years old this year and you've got less than $60,000 of retirement savings in your CPF account, you'll be eligible to receive a top-up of $1,000. Now, Finance Minister Heng went on to say that mostly women will benefit because they gave up their lives. I'm thinking about my mother here. You know, she gave up her job, became a full-time mom. How significant is this, especially in light with what we kind of briefly touched on about the possibility of elections coming up? Bit of emotions involved there.
Yes, you know, I think again, you know, the budget tries to provide recognition. And certainly, you know, you will see that there's something in it for everyone. So, you know, so Elliot, you're right. You know, this particular CPF top-up is very much directed at homemakers, you know, caregivers who gave up a career or the opportunity to build their CPF savings. Sure. You know, so 1,000 may not be a lot, you know, but I think it represents, you know, that gesture. But I think it raises a question, you know, whether on a more regular basis, you know, whether something could be done, you know, to recognize this men and women, you know, who for a variety of reasons, you know, may lack CPF savings.
And Eugene, I want to take up that point because if you look at that numbers that are involved, I was a bit taken aback because the number of people eligible for this $1,000 top-up numbers about 300,000. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. And this is for a CPF amount of 60,000 or less. Now, the CPF board recommends that our minimum sum, I believe today, is 161,000. So that's way short. In other words, it brings to mind also other significant social elements of underfunded retirements.
It does. I mean, so we are really dealing with the question of retirement adequacy, or in this case, inadequacy, right? And many Singaporeans have come to, in a way, rely on the CPF, right? Whether you talk about property or education or healthcare. And so you're looking at a fairly sizable number of Singaporeans, you know, just below 10%, which to me is significant, you know, who will face sort of real concerns about whether they have enough in their retirement years. You know, and so this 1,000, you know, while not significant, will help. But I think, as I said, you know, it raises questions about whether we need to relook the CPF in a more fundamental way.
It's the 19th of February, the day after Budget 2019. And I'm sure you're asking yourself, hey, what are my goodies for budget election? We're discussing the political and social observations of Budget 2019 with Eugene Tan, Associate Professor of Law at SMU. Bicentennial bonus was brought up yesterday, Prof. A few eligibility criteria that need to be met to receive the support, for example, GST voucher. Do you think this covers the majority of Singaporeans who need the support? I believe it's supposed to cover like 1.4 million Singaporeans or so.
It looks like it, at least based on the MOF data.
Sure.
And I think, you know, it's an attempt to try to bring the bicentennial closer, you know, to a segment of the population, you know, who may have other more pressing concerns. The cynical part of me wonders whether, you know, this is really an excuse to try to give money away.
Sure.
But, you know, I would have thought that, well, you know, if we talk about a top-up to SkillsFuture, you know, that could be something helpful. But I think in the end, you know, the government has that prerogative to decide how it wants to allocate funds.
Maybe they use SG50 as a case study. Hey, it did great 3 years ago. Let's try it again.
Oh, definitely. I think they took something out of the SG50 playbook.
Yeah.
Right? So the idea that, you know, that you want people to have a stake, be part of the celebration. But I would argue that SG50 was a lot more intuitive, right?
Sure,
you know,
sure.
You know, it was something that Singaporeans, you know, are part of this amazing journey. Mm. Whereas the bicentennial, you know, I mean, you know, we all have different ideas about what exactly does a bicentennial mean.
Yeah, it seems so far away, so long ago.
Correct, right? Especially if you say that, well, you know, the bicentennial is really the springboard to look back Singapore 700 years ago. Mm. You know, but I think in the end, whether you call it bicentennial, whether you call it by any other name, you know, it is still something that the recipients will be happy. But I would have thought that if we could make it something that every Singaporean, you know, would receive, I think that would have been a lot more meaningful.
Mm. Now, Eugene, there were also detailed packages to support the seniors. So the Merdeka Generation Package sees annual MediSave top-ups of about $200 annually for 5 years, and additional subsidies, obviously, for outpatient care, additional MediShield life premium subsidies, among other things as well. How do you think these subsidies are going to be funded, and how will that impact future generations' expectations?
Well, in terms of funding, I think, you know, it'll be funded out of the 2019-2020 financial year budget in terms of the initial cost. But I think there will be question, because this is a lifelong, meaning, you know, so long as you're part of the medical generation, these benefits will accrue to you throughout your life. And I think that's where perhaps, you know, the GST increase in a couple of years' time, you know, will help to pay for whatever recurrent needs. But I think, you know, Brian, you raised that question, right? You know, whether, you know, with two mega packages, the Pioneer Generation as well as the Merdeka Generation, whether that raises expectations that every generation could expect something. In a way, you know, the arguments could become lesser, but I think a lot would depend on what society needs. You know, we are looking at, you know, society changing rapidly. You know, there are increasing needs. Demography is also rapidly shifting. And so, you know, I think the big challenge for the government is really, how do you manage expectations? You know, so what's going to happen for those born in the 60s?
Eugene, right. I want to drill down in terms of what you've just mentioned about the changing demographics and therefore the changing needs. Now, there has been a lot of discussion now over the last couple of years of the aging population. That aging population has two fundamental impacts as well, one of which we touched on, which is retirement savings. The other thing is obviously about medical coverage. You know, statistics in the US that have shown basically that a lot of times most people are one medical catastrophe away from the financial catastrophe of being bankrupt. We have an issue here also potentially, which has been slowly, you know, surfacing, where perhaps there needs to be a relook at how healthcare is funded in Singapore. What are your thoughts on this?
Yes, I think that's an excellent point, because, you know, with now more money going into healthcare, you can imagine entrepreneurial, you know, private healthcare providers, you know, trying to find ways and means of tapping, you know, the extra government money that's going to it. I mean, we saw that, for example, with preschool education, you know, when government raised the subsidies, you know, all the preschool education providers, you know, found ways to tap on those, and the fees went up. Mm-hmm. You know, so I think it's something which we need to relook, you know, because most of our healthcare needs are, in a way, weighted towards the twilight years. Mm-hmm. You know, no surprises there. And so, you know, if we talk about healthcare adequacy in addition to retirement adequacy, I think it raises a lot of questions, you know. And so when we look at the top-ups for homemakers and all, it speaks to this challenge, you know. How do we ensure that the cohorts of Singaporeans will be able to have adequate funds, you know, for their healthcare needs in their twilight years?
We're speaking about the political and social observations of Budget 2019. Eugene Tan, Associate Professor of Law at SMU, in the studio with us. Now, I wish we had more time, but we've got to do this really quickly. We have focused a lot on the people who have built Singapore. There is some focus on the people who are going to build Singapore for younger generations, the younger couples, CPF housing grants, tax benefits, baby bonus, even better flexible work arrangements. But Prof. Eugene, and who do you think perhaps has missed out on Budget 2019? Has it covered the young and old enough?
Oh, that's a tough one. I think once we start to being calm. Well, I think, you know, the budget attempts to try to provide something for everyone. I mean, even someone in school, you know, would get additional
EduSave
right? Top-ups. You know, and then you think about those who are much older Singaporeans, you know, you have the Merdeka generation package. I suppose, you know, again, you know, the budget, you know, there will be questions about, you know, could more have been done for the sandwich class?
Yes.
You know, those who are not so well off that they can provide for themselves, you know, but yet, you know, not in such a situation that they would need, you know, the targeted help that the government has been dispensing, you know, over the years. But I think, you know, in the end, it's really something that when you look at the budget as a whole, I would say that, you know, there has been an effort, you know, but ultimately, you know, it's really what people feel about it, you know, that will determine, you know, whether the budget will be well received or not, and whether, you know, you will earn the government of the day, you know, brownie points when they go to the ballot, when they go to the polls.
It comes down to that. Well, thank you so much for your time this morning. We really appreciate it. We've been speaking to Eugene Tan, Associate Professor of Law at SMU. This Budget 2019 discussion was written and produced by Nadira Zaidi.
To listen to more great interviews, download our podcasts at moneyfm893.sg or download the SPH radio app available on Google Play or the App Store.